Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Around the stretch we come, making our way home, 9 o'clock hour, and I'm looking at the NFL schedule, and Sean Payton's Broncos, who are 5-3, take on Jim Harbaugh's, Raven. I just want to make sure I had the right Harbaugh. Ravens, who are also 5-3. Who is it, John? Yeah, Jim is with the Chargers. So anyway, here's what I'm thinking. Imagine this, if you will. And we're a long way from any of this happening. I just want to see what kind of emotional response this elicits in you. Imagine Sean Payton bringing his Broncos to play in the Super Bowl here in New Orleans in February. What kind of emotional response would that elicit from you? Well, with that in mind, Jason Lantner joins us, our friend, professor of psychology at Kutztown University, to talk about sports psychology and why we get so wrapped up in the teams and it becomes so emotional. How you doing, Professor?
I'm doing well, Tommy. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming back on. You know, I'm watching a Saints game a while back. I forgot which one it is now, and they have a little rally going. They think they're coming back. And the kicker misses the extra point, and I swear to goodness I got nauseated, physically nauseated. I'm watching the LSU game Saturday night, and Garrett Nussmeier had a rough night. And again, I'm just pacing up. And I watch football alone. I don't like to have any company because I like to pay attention to it, but I'm talking and screaming and getting all emotional. Why, Professor, do we get so invested in sports teams when, with free agency, with name, image, and likeness, be it professional or college football, it is like Seinfeld once said, we're rooting for the uniforms, not the people, because sometimes we don't even know who the people are.
Great question. Tommy, please know that you are not alone in the way that you embrace and respond to sports, for that matter.
Okay.
So when we're talking about the idea of sport fandom, the key idea is we have this social identity and we're connected to the team. And as you say, like we're connected to the uniform. Sometimes it is a player, sometimes it's the coaches, as you mentioned, Sean Payton. Mm-hmm. But we're really connected to the team, and that could be something that we grew up with, whether it's regional, whether we watch parents or uncles or older siblings or whoever they kind of root for is what we adopt. And then that team becomes really a part of our persona. We're connected to them. So their wins are our highs and their losses are our lows. And we take them to heart. We respond in certain ways. So it is a lot of really self-esteem maintenance, if you will, of how we emotionally as well as psychologically respond to the competitions and not just the outcomes, but also the different types of plays throughout the competition as well.
Self-esteem maintenance, you say?
Yeah. So when we think about the idea of being connected to a team, we know that it's important for us as with any individual to maintain positive self-esteem, and we can sort of fluctuate how we perceive or psychologically adjust to that. So, for example, research has shown that when, you know, the team that you root for, we'll just say our team, when the team that you root for, and we'll just say LSU right now, when they win, people respond more affirmatively that we won when they talk about the past weekend. And please understand, these are people who are not on the team.
We didn't LSU have a damn loses, thing to do with it. We had nothing to do with any of it.
Exactly. But by saying that we won, you're connecting yourself to that victory, which boosts your self-esteem and the way that you feel about yourself. Now, we can also psychologically distance ourselves. So if LSU loses, and people may ask, hey, how did the team do this weekend? They may say, or likely to say, that same fan, well, they lost. And by saying they lost, they're disconnecting themselves from that negativity of that loss to still maintain some positivity about their self-esteem and the way they feel about themselves.
Is that a common thing? We won, they lost?
Yeah, you can hear it all the time. Just talk to your friends. And a lot of times they do it. I'll call people out on it. Like they talk like the we won thing. I was like, really? I didn't see you playing this past weekend. And that's more easy to identify. But the they lost is a little bit it's more subtle at times. But if you pay attention to conversations and you hear people talk about it, you go to a bar on a Sunday and listen to NFL games, you feel the emotions that people experience at the moment, and then maybe you get the follow-up from college football Saturdays at the same time to see how people are connecting. Because maybe their college team lost on a Saturday, but now their NFL team is doing well. They can also shift their identity from the college team to the NFL team to still feel okay about who they are.
You got the giggle of truth out of me on that one, because I just thought about how many times I said, we won, but they lost, or, and you know, man, they suck. They're terrible. But really, because it was we when they were playing. Well, we sacked them. We did this, but they did that. What about the bandwagon effect or whatever it is? There are different, I guess, levels of buy-in for fans emotionally, and what is it that causes some to... Are any there, win or lose, or is that the minority, and most people, they like a winner and they attach onto that?
Well, I think it goes back to kind of what type of fan people are, because there are people who are diehards. Like, they're going to stick with the team through the thick and through the thin, for that matter. They're going to stick through all the potentially losing seasons to all the winning seasons. I mean, Cubs fans and Red Sox fans are great examples of that. They had rabid fan bases for years and years and years and years and decades and decades, and then they finally did become victorious and win World Series. But then there are some who are just, they're fans, but they're more fans for the social engagement of the action. They're not as tied into the competition as they are to the sort of the camaraderie and the family atmosphere, being with their other friends or family members who are fans of that particular team. So there are sort of, as you say, there are different levels of engagement that a fan can have with the team. Obviously, in some way, those who are really committed decades or decades, years after years, are going to be more psychologically and emotionally connected to the team because of the way that they sort of buy in. And then you mentioned the idea of a bandwagon. I mean, bandwagon, you think about it, just go back to psychological self-esteem, is that they're jumping on to a winner in some way because it helps them feel better about themselves by having a close connection to something that's very positive.
When it comes to sports, do people react differently to more sports? Are some more emotional than others?
Oh, of course. I mean, there are always individual differences in how we respond to anything on a day-to-day basis. And so the more committed that we are to this identity as being a fan of a particular team, the more likely we're going to have a more severe emotional response to the outcome. Of a play, of a competition, of a championship, whatever it may be. And the people who are not as committed are not going to have as severe of an emotional response to it. It's just, it's simply the way in which, and I don't want to say that we're hardwired, but it's the way that we're psychologically wired to respond or interpret, perceive, or understand the meaning of that particular competition, or the meaning of that social connection to who we are as a person.
Perhaps I phrased that poorly. What I was trying to ask is, are baseball fans necessarily less passionate than football fans, less passionate than soccer fans, or does it all depend?
I think it all depends. You're going to have different cultures and different fan bases. Up where I'm at, Philadelphia is widely regarded as one of the more interesting, shall we say, fan bases across the nation. And that goes for Eagles fans, for Flyers fans, for Phillies fans. Mm-hmm. And so different cities have different levels of fandom, what the expectations are. The Raiders in the NFL, the Vegas Raiders, mm-hmm. They have a very particular fan base. And there are expectations in some way, if you think about a sport fan culture, whether we're talking American football, football known internationally, soccer for that matter, baseball, hockey, whatever it is. There are different expectations for what it means to be a fan of a particular team because of the cultural norms or standards with that particular team.
Has the proliferation of gambling and legalization of sports betting changed this equation at all?
I'm not sure if it's changed the psychological connection to the teams. I think it's changed the way in which people are consuming the games. And by that, I mean how they're focusing on what is happening in the game from a play-to-play standpoint. And I hear so many people talking about, well, I don't care who wins, but I need so-and-so to do really well, because they're you know, picking a particular player in fantasy league, or they're gambling in some way based on that. So I think it becomes more focused on the player level from a monetary financial standpoint, but I'm not sure if it's altering their psychological connection to a particular team.
I guess what I was wondering, you know, you can bet at so many different things. You can bet point spreads, you can bet totals. So if you bet on the total of the game and somebody's got $100 on the line and they're a rabid Saints fan, say, but it means that the other team's going to have to score for them to win their bet, is it a win-win situation or a lose-lose situation for them?
And I think that goes to the psychological maintenance that we can do. So how are we adjusting how we interpret that? Is it going to be that we're focused more on the overall connection to the team, or are we going to focus more on that individual person, which the performance might give you a financial boost, but you're not necessarily psychologically tied to that individual as much as you are to the team? Maybe you offset it. Like, the financial gain is good, and it may play off the potential, negative social connection if the team were to lose.
I wonder if the terminology would be, we won the game, but I lost my bet.
it could be. I know they talk a lot about this idea. So I mentioned, like, the idea of self-esteem maintenance. So there's the idea of basking in reflected glory called birging, B-I-R-G-I-N-G. So basking in reflected glory is the we part of it. There's also corfing, which is cutting off reflected failure. So C-O-R-F-I-N-G would be the, you know, distancing yourself after a particular loss. So yeah, there could be something that would need to be investigated more about how the idea of fantasy league and gambling has sort of altered the experience of what fandom is from a team perspective.
Where does peer pressure fit into this? Because I'll see people every now and then, I'll wonder if they're from out of town, expatriates or whatever, from, you know, with the 49ers logo on a rear window of the car or whatever. You don't see a lot of, divisional rivals, but you might see some, as you said, some Eagles fans with the gear and so forth. Do people, when they move to other places, generally speaking, because what's the old thing, Professor? Groups are predictable, individuals are not. Do they generally assimilate and adopt a new home team? Because I saw a bunch of Saints jerseys at the Chargers game, and I don't know if it's people that traveled there or not. Or do they take the team with them, or do they take on the team where they move?
If I was a betting man to go with the theme here, I would say that they take the team with them for the most part, because it's really an ingrained part of who they are, that particular social identity. And there is, if they're really a fan of a team, there's a historical nature of that connection that could stem from growing up in the family and watching stuff with mom or dad or attending games on the weekends. And so it's probably unlikely that they may give up that particular social connection, that fandom, but they could also potentially start to adopt the local team. Like, there's nothing against that. And then it becomes a challenge if those two team plays, who do you root for? And that's a whole different question. But I think for the most part, they're going to be keeping those social connections. They're going to keep that original team and maybe dip their toes in a bit to experience what that fandom is for that new culture.
Yeah, I found interesting last night they had a couple of Yankees fans ejected after they ripped the ball out of the glove of a Dodgers outfielder. But that's in direct contrast to what happened in Chicago with that poor guy with the Cubs, right, that interfered with the catch. Well, I don't need to bring up his name again. Tim's telling me his name in my ear. I think that poor man suffered enough. I don't think I need to bring up his name again. But it is a big contrast there, and that kind of speaks to a lot of what we're talking about, huh?
Yeah, and I think it's acknowledging I'm not sure if it's like commitment to the team or, you know, why would you rip the ball out of a player's hand just to have the ball? I mean, not knowing the outcome, the consequence, obviously, that they got. But does that demonstrate the level of your commitment to being a Yankees fan by doing that, by actually interfering in the gameplay? I don't know, and I wonder how other Yankees fans actually perceive that. Is that really purposeful, like, yay, way to go, you're a big fan? Or it's like, no, you don't need to do that. You can still be a fan and appreciate good play by the other team, and that doesn't downplay what your team is doing.
And then I would think if you had a bet on that particular play or whatever, then that would factor into it as well. Let me take a break. We'll pick it up when we come back. Because in order to expand to here, Professor, first of all, there was a story back in Psychology Today about some research indicating that when NFL teams lose, domestic violence increases, and what kind of ripple effect that can have. And also I wanted to see if any of this extends out, you know, with election day next Tuesday to political parties, where it seems as if political parties have morphed into teams. You know, we talk about red and blue, so you got team colors, right? And I don't know if it's about ideology or it's about we or them and winning or losing. We'll talk about it when we come back. And if it's the same thing when it comes to politics, if, say, the election next Tuesday, if you're a Republican and Donald Trump loses and you say, well, Trump lost, but we this, or if Harris wins or loses, then you say just the opposite. We'll talk when we come back. Interesting conversation. Professor Jason Lanter, professor of psychology at Kutztown University, sports psychologist. Are you emotionally tied into the Saints, LSU? Do you get physically sick when something bad happens? Text me at 504-260-1870. Tommy Tucker back in a flash, WWL.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
Talking to our friend Dr. Jason Lanter, professor of psychology at Kutztown University, about how we get so emotionally invested in teams and get so fired up and so angry if they lose. It can increase domestic violence, especially in cases of upsets. How would you suggest to people that they keep it in perspective, doctor?
That is a great question, and not one that is easily solved, for that matter.
Let me interrupt for a second. What about you? You're a sports psychologist. You live in Philly, so I would imagine you got some ties to one of the teams, right, or all of them?
Well, I actually don't, because I'm an academic transplant. I grew up in the Midwest, so I have like
so
a
who'd
big
you bring with
Chicago
you?
Bears connection.
Okay, there
Pardon?
You go. All right.
There you go.
But anyway, so go ahead. How do you keep it in perspective?
I think that the biggest thing is trying to talk to an individual and see, like, if you want to, you can really ask them, why is this so important to you? What do you get from it? And sometimes they may struggle to really explain that connection that they have and why it is so meaningful to them. I mean, we know, because I've watched games, and we feel like the little butterflies in the stomach at tense moments if you're connected to a team, sort of as you were saying, like with the game this past weekend. Mm-hmm. But I think it is challenging to purposely distance ourselves from something that is so meaningful to us. That is not an easy psychological process, to be able to be unbiased and more rational and logical in our thinking when our emotions are very high. And that's just life. That's just our humanity in some way. So it's not easy to really disentangle that, to really set emotions aside, to really think about, okay, I'm connected to this team, but really it's just sort of, dare I say, for fun. I don't get anything back from it and how much I've invested. I'm actually probably spending more money for that matter. But how do I process it better, so I'm making better sense or appropriate sense of what this outcome truly means to me as an individual in my day-to-day life?
Do you see anybody having fun here? Would be something that could be heard around living rooms in the afternoons on Saturdays or Sundays. Somebody texted in and said, please ask Dr. Lanter why I get so upset watching the games, but then the players themselves who were playing in the games are laughing and talking and hugging each other after the game is over.
Yeah, so it's always interesting to see that sort of jovial nature, especially like after, you know, very aggressive football games, for that
gut-wrenching loss, a gut-wrenching loss. You're eating your guts out, right? You're dying, and then they're hugging each other and laughing.
Mm-hmm. And you wonder how much they're able to turn it off and turn it on in terms of like the emotions on the field, the emotion once the whistle is over, like the game is over. And as professionals, that's part of what they have to do, is they have to have a better self-regulatory ability to perform at that level, to be able to have the emotions hit when they hit, and then to be able to calm them down, to be able to participate, to be able to play well. And they may have to do the same thing once the competition is over, like know that it's over, or maybe they're just very well at masking it, covering it, because they want to go talk to their friend who they played with in college who's now on the opposite team. Mm-hmm. And maybe they're making plans for later on when they want to get together and hang out and catch up. But for us, the regular fans, we haven't had necessarily the purposeful, learning to be able to regulate those emotions and to be able to turn them on and turn them off, because we may have the water cooler conversation the day after. Oh, why did they do this? Or why did they do that? Oh, they should have made this call. And that may continue to go over in our mind, which is then going to, perpetuate those emotions that we experienced.
And I guess I would add that they're getting paid either way, and we're not getting paid because our payoff is emotional, right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously from the business end of things, it is a business when you're really looking at the professional level. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of them recognize it, especially when they're veterans in their sport, that they recognize the business end of things, to enjoy it for what it is. And once it's over, once that final whistle is done, that final whistle is done. And it's not saying that it's easy. Like, they don't take losses hard. I'm sure they take them really, really hard. But they're probably very good at controlling those emotional responses, regulating the way that they feel, at least in public, about it.
You know, and as we have this conversation, I'm thinking maybe part of that could be just an emotional release of, hey, you know what, I can still walk. Seriously. Because you go into a game not knowing, right?
Yeah, I'm still amazed on a week-to-week basis the lack of severe injuries in NFL and college football. Based on the size and the speed and the ferocity with which that is played.
The physics
alone.
Maybe
there is an appreciation for the players for that.
The physics alone, with the force and the mass and the velocity, I'm right there with you, Doctor. I don't know how. I really don't. I don't know how people aren't carried off. I guess it's the training and it's big, fast, strong people hitting big, fast, strong people. I asked you earlier about political parties, and I don't know if there's any kind of change in that or it's always been that way. You got team colors, red or blue. You got a mascot, a donkey or an elephant. Has the same emotion kind of shifted from sports to politics? Has it always been there, or has it come from politics to sports, or am I just making stuff up in my head? Because I do that sometimes as well.
No, I think you're making a great kind of carryover of the idea about social identity. I've been interested in the idea of the political parties and affiliation, and you can call them teams for that matter, as you talk about red and blue and donkey and elephant. And so we sort of make this idea that, I mean, also recognize that there are more than two political parties, but it's really two major players in American politics. And so when we think about this idea, and going back to sports, we'll just continue to talk football. Football has, you know, at this point we have the BCS in college, and then we have the Super Bowl in the NFL. And these are major, major championships each year. They're annual. When we talk about U.S. politics, the major, major quote-unquote championship, if you want to refer to it as that, is really the presidential election every 4 years. Yes, there are midterm elections, but those do not get as much publicity, dare I say. They don't get as much coverage as what we do for these major presidential elections. You add in the fact that our country is probably more divided than ever, more kind of polarized than ever with regard to the rhetoric amongst the two major candidates. And it does make for a we-them dichotomy, depending on which side you fall on, how you feel that you identify with, what you affiliate with, for that matter. I am really intrigued at your idea or your proposed idea that what's going to happen next Wednesday. How are people going to respond to the election that this they approach? Or you say the name, like Harris lost or Harris won or Trump lost or Trump won or we won or we lost. Because that will be purposeful. And I think, you know, you mentioned you're now aware of it, that you say we a lot. It's really subtle at times how people use this self-esteem maintenance approach simply by changing the terminology, the words they use, to help them feel okay about themselves and sometimes better about themselves.
Because it seems like when you get right down to it, it's really not about ideology. It's about winning or losing when it comes to politics with a lot of people, is it not?
It is. I mean, you definitely want to be on the winning side, but at the same time, that winning side is connected to who you are. But I think politics is different than sports, because politics, at least right now, it's the idea that that outcome is not just immediate. That outcome is for 4 years. Mm-hmm. And so there's a longer term connection to that loss, if you will, or that win, if you will. than what we would experience with sports, because sports, we have another opportunity that's going to start, let's say, 6 months from now. But with the presidential election, we don't have another opportunity in 6 months. It's going to be another 3 years before you have another opportunity to get that new person who may move forward with the party, for that matter.
And I guess when it comes to policy, so much of it is nuanced. It's not you score or you don't. It's not red, it's not blue. It's purple, really, when you get right down to the problems we have in this country and what are the ways to solve them. And, you know, I was saying the other day, earlier this morning, rather, that I had to block about 8 friends because I got tired of getting the text. Whenever their candidate, one or the other, breaks wind, it's either it smells like roses or it stinks, depending on what side of the echo chamber you're on. And I got tired of hearing it because, to me, now we're in the stage of the presidential race like the Super Bowl pregame show. And if Bill Cowher picks the Steelers, then you love him. If Michael Strahan picks the Giants, then you love him. Neither of which has anything to do with who's going to vote for anybody or the outcome of the game, but I guess we just look for something before the actual game takes place.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is interesting. Like they, both candidates sort of made their major final speeches last night, one right near me, for that matter. And it's interesting that you propose it sort of as like the Super Bowl pregame show, which is almost getting to be about a week long at this point.
Because you know why, Professor, you look at the, now they're talking about the excruciating minutia, right? Just like in hour three of the Super Bowl pregame show.
Yeah, they're covering all the details, and it's really for those people who have not made up their minds, which I'm still on some level amazed that there are people who have not made up their mind on the election at this point. But it gives us more time, and then we're if you're going to pay attention to the political pundits at this point to give you information, all the information is out there. So you're sort of working on the process to decide which team you're on. Or you're on the team that you're on and you're dedicated, you're stuck, and no matter what you hear, it's not going to change.
Love talking to you, Professor. Thank you. I appreciate your time, Jason Lanter, Professor of Psychology at Kutztown University. We'll take a quick break. Speaking of emotional investment, talk to Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter. Whenever 9:47, quickly to Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter. I'm Tommy Tucker on WWL. Jeff, tell me about Derek Carr and the likelihood of, first of all, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Tommy. How are you?
Right, how was the trip to L.A.? Good? Other than, you know.
Oh, yeah,
game?
It was nice. It was nice. The great weather, and then we went and watched a really, really unfortunate football game.
It was hard to watch, I'm telling you. It really was, but I'm looking ahead to better things. Derek Carr, well, no, but really, I mean, you look at what's going on in Cincinnati, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but they got Joe Burrow. You look at what's going on in, where else was it? I mentioned that struggling, they got the quarterback. They got their quarterback, so it could be.
Jets, probably.
Trevor Lawrence, yeah, that's what it was, the Jaguars. Or okay. The Jets, either way, right? So, but we didn't have our quarterback. Hopefully we'll get him back on Sunday. Thoughts? What do you think?
Yeah, I think the expectation is that he gets out to practice later today, and ideally, you know, if things go well, he'll play. He had throwing sessions last week. He had another throwing session on Monday. Dennis Allen said it was about 50 throws. And then kind of how he bounces back from that, how his body kind of feels kind of coming back from that and going through a couple days of practice is going to be a big thing. But, yeah, I think the hope is that he's out there and you can try to start to get this thing turned around. Like, I think it's easy to lose perspective of the last 3 weeks in the sense of, like, man, this is a 6-game losing streak. Mm-hmm. You know, the first 3 games of that losing streak, while bad, were was a picture of a team that was kind of right there and just needed to figure out how to win games. Mm-hmm. The Kansas City game notwithstanding, it's the last 3 weeks where you've been relying on a rookie quarterback who I think probably just wasn't ready to be thrown into that situation, that it really, really got away from you. And in large part because you just couldn't put points on the board. You know, if you take away that second quarter against the Bucs, which was largely about, hey, the defense is forcing turnovers and giving the offense really good opportunity to score. I mean, you're talking about an offense that's put up 19 points in the other 11 quarters of football. And I'm taking away the safety from that. So, you know, if you can get an offense to go out there and score some points, you know, that'll make life easier on your defense. Because I think you go to that Chargers game and you say, hey, the big complaint about our defense was we couldn't stop the run. And we stopped the run in that game, right? You kept points off the board. I don't think the Chargers scored in the first quarter of that game. Like, so you gave your offense a chance. They weren't able to take advantage. You'd hope that if you put Derek Carr back in there, you're a little more functional and you can take advantage of some of those things. Especially going out to Carolina should be a win. You know, there's, you know, if the Saints are one of the worst teams in the league, which the last 3 weeks would make you believe, they're not worse than the Panthers. The Panthers are the 32nd best team in this NFL right now. So, you know, you go win a game and you see if you can string some more together after that. But, yeah, I think the idea is you're going to get Derek Carr back and things are going to start to look a little bit better.
Do we know anything about Pete Werner or not? Did he get nicked up?
No. Yeah, it looked like he came off the field with some sort of discomfort after that. You know, he missed that interception late in the game. Looked like he went down kind of awkwardly. It didn't seem like it was – so he was dealing with a hamstring injury prior to that. It didn't look like he was dealing with anything hamstring-related. So we'll have to see on the injury report today exactly what he's listed with. But, yeah, we don't know exactly what it was. It doesn't seem like anything significant, though.
Yeah, I think not to us, but I think I know maybe what it seems like what it was, but we don't need to talk about that. Let's talk about, you know what I'm saying, the wide receivers. Saints wide receivers, you don't really have a star out there, do you?
Yeah, I mean, I thought Chris Olave had a really solid game. You know, he had to get 8 catches, 107 yards in his first game, going over 100 yards. He was able to get out of the game without a concussion, so that's always a nice thing, because there was a point in that game where we thought he might have had a concussion because his first catch of the game he got unloaded on.
I got to correct myself, Jeff, because, again, it goes to who's throwing the ball, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, Chris didn't really play either of the first two starts with Spencer, so it's tough to put that on him, right, because he caught a pass, got concussed, missed the rest of that game, missed the next game. So, yeah, I mean, you'd hope that you can kind of build on that. You know, he didn't exactly blow anything up from a receiving perspective when Derek was in there. So we'll see how that goes. But, no, I mean, without Rashid, you know, you're going to have to rely on him a lot more. I'm hopeful that you can continue to get the tight ends involved. We'll have to see Kendre Miller in terms of can he play. You know, he dealt with the hamstring injury in camp. Now he has a hamstring injury to the other leg. So hopefully it's not as significant as that previous one, and it's not going to keep him out for an extended period of time, but we'll have to wait and see. But, no, I think the playmakers on offense, you're definitely, you know, you don't have enough. Let's put it that way. It doesn't seem like you have enough, and we'll have to see what they do in terms of Marquez Valdes-Scantling. He was added to the roster last week. He did not play. You know, it's tough to learn an offense in 4 to 5 days and go out there and execute, so we'll have to see if maybe this week he's able to pick that up and get out there against the Panthers, and that'll give you a little bit more of a deep threat than you've had. Right now you're kind of relying on Mason Tipton in that role, and as much as the team likes Mason Tipton, it's, you know, you're relying on a UDFA and a key role of your offense. That's not ideal. So we'll have to see. But, no, I think when you look at the offense, the playmakers are not there. Like, you don't have the level of playmakers that you'd like at this point.
And real quick, before we let you go, not just playmakers, but it seemed like watching the game, I got the feel that every time somebody had a chance to step up and make a play, they didn't. If you want to talk about the dropped interception, whatever, it just seems like every time they had a chance, they were close, but didn't do it. Do you get the idea that maybe once this team, once people start stepping up and make plays, that it gets contagious?
You'd hope. And yeah, the defensive backs on contested catches was definitely a problem in that game. Yeah, you were in position multiple times. The ball got completed over your head. You know, those are kind of those 50-50 opportunities that they're 50-50 for a reason. They could go either way. You need to win, you know, enough of those to swing the result. And they just didn't. I mean, every chance they had, it seemed, to make a play in a key moment didn't get made, and the Chargers made them. So that's how you lose games.
I'm optimistic. We'll see. Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate your time as always. Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter. And I'll say it again. If y'all are not turning down that sound and listening to Mike Haas and Deuce and Jeff on the sideline, you're missing out. Taking a break, coming back, finding out what Newell's got for us today on WWL.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.